Welcome to the Current Affairs Podcast. This is your host, Arjun Ghosh, speaking. And today we've got a lot to cover. And first thing we'll be covering, the Russian airstrikes in Syria recently. Now, basically what happened was, back in March, there was a ceasefire agreed between Turkey and Russia in the Idlib province, which has been maintained pretty substantially throughout this entire time. But just recently, there were airstrikes that were carried out by Russia, and they killed dozens of Turkish-backed rebels. Now, this was basically the headquarters of the Faylak al-Sham, which is a Turkish-backed rebel organization that is responsible for protecting the Turkish presence in Idlib. Now, the current escalation in violence in this past week between Russia and Turkey is actually something not very, you know, unexpected, because already we look at the situation in Nagorno-Karabakh between Armenia and Azerbaijan, where Russia has been mediating between Armenia and Azerbaijan, while Turkey has been taking a pretty firm stance along with Azerbaijan and has been very militarily involved in the conflict. As a result of which, this airstrike in Syria could very well be another offense by Russia against Turkey. As you know, sort of, you would say, a threat or alarm against Ankara. Now, basically today, the UN Special Envoy to Syria gave his briefing, where he spoke about the execution of UN Security Council Resolution 2254 and spoke about constitutional reform and constitutional change. Now, obviously, it is first important that if the Syrian civil war were to end, it would be important for the external powers to first stop intervening. If you listen to one of my previous podcasts where I spoke to Vedant Mishra, even he also, you know, emphasized upon this very fact that foreign intervention has been a reason why we've been prolonging the war in Syria so much. And the Syrian-led political process is of high value and is extremely important, and is the only way Assad will actually, you know, want to carry out this way that Syria progresses with the political transitional process. Now, moreover, this entire spike in Russian airstrikes, like we've obviously seen the various skirmishes of US and Russian troops as well in Syria, it all suspected influence of Moscow in Syria, and it's obviously at a high alarming rate. Now, the more Turkey begins its offensive against Russia, the worse things will get, and therefore obviously it's extremely important that parties de-escalate the entire region, and this reflects both in Syria as well as Nagorno-Karabakh region. Now, speaking about the UN Special Envoy to Syria, he obviously spoke about the various agreements that have been taking place between the rebel groups, and these are quite positive considering the fact that there have been no talks. Now, finally, we are finding decent of de-escalation talks and the constitutional reform being brought up in Syria. But again, it should be in favor of the Syrian people as a whole, so as to ensure that there is no rebellion, no form of unrest in the Syrian region. And that is of high importance at this point of time. And you know, it is important that both Moscow and Ankara, you know, continue the ceasefire that they've been going through. And this, you know, all of this together, along with the constitutional reform and already election taking place, this could, you know, officially conclude the war in Syria, which has had devastating humanitarian consequences. And therefore, it is important that all parties, you know, agree to that global ceasefire, that ceasefire in Syria, and that is the key to the developments in Syria itself. While now, at the same time, the US has now announced new sanctions on the Iranian oil sector, because, you know, these oil companies of Iran were, you know, they're financially supporting the Iranian Quds Force and the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. And the Trump administration has, you know, been ramping up more and more economic pressure on Tehran, and it's getting in a really bad shape, because just today, the IAEA reported that that Iran has built a new nuclear facility, and although Iran says for peaceful purposes, it can clearly state that this could also be used for building a potential nuclear weapon. Now, the more and more, now even if we just take out the nuclear part of the sanctions out of the context, let's just take into context right now the Iranian people. Now, The sanctions are continuously like degrading Iranian currency, and they are having a very negative effect on Iran's currency as a whole, and even on the Iranian people, the Iranian population. They are not being able to conduct their businesses, no foreign investments, resulting in even worse economic pressure for Iran. And as a result, you know, Iran would go even more and more rogue as the sanctions keep strengthening on Iran. Therefore, you know, the Trump administration is taking even worse diplomatic measures as more and more sanctions keep applying on Iran's oil sector. Because, you know, even if the Iranian government would want a nuclear deal, its people would most probably revolt against it, because, you know, again, these sanctions are destroying their lives. And this new sanction, Iran's oil sector, it is just pushing Iran and provoking Iran even more to violate provisions of the nuclear agreement. And Iran would, you know, officially be starting to violate specific provisions, and that would result in, you know, even more and more countries soon losing faith in an agreement, and that kind of diplomatic agreement would soon, you know, degrade and would no longer be held valid. And it is a pretty bad scenario. It's a worst case scenario to look into. Now, speaking about the need for diplomacy at, you know, this period of time, well, Russian President Vladimir Putin, he proposed that Russia and NATO inspect each other's military bases to enforce a moratorium on deployment of new nuclear missiles in Europe. Now, last year, this very kind of a treaty had been ended by both the US and Russia, because they both blamed each other for violating this agreement. Now, you know, the missiles in Europe, the deployment of missiles in Europe have obviously been a key issue between the US and Russia, and this has not only been now, but also in the Cold War. Even then, this was a very big issue that came out during the Cuban Missile Crisis, wherein the Soviet Union, it had its missile station in Cuba, and then Soviet leader Nikita Khrushchev, he was ready to remove those missiles if the US were ready to remove it from Turkey. And the more you look at Europe as a whole, it was in the Cold War an issue between the US and the USSR, and now it's something between US and Russia. And therefore, these nuclear missiles just keep on escalating that amount of tension between Russia and NATO, because now the US is part of the organization as a whole, NATO. And so, obviously, this kind of a comprehensive agreement is extremely important, and, you know, the Trump administration may even get a foreign policy achievement if they can actually come at an agreement with Moscow, because, you know, after all, it is extremely important that since we are living in a world where denuclearization is now a current trend, it is important the US and Russia come towards a consensus on at least, you know, banning such nuclear weapons in Europe, because obviously it is in the midst of very populated countries. Any kind of nuclear offensive would be devastating to Europe as a whole. Now, at the same time, yesterday, like a couple of days ago, I did a podcast on, you know, on Amy Coney Barrett, the nomination to Supreme Court, and I spoke about how the Senate was, you know, just speeding the nomination through. And yesterday night, she was sworn in as a Supreme Court Justice. And, you know, the one thing which I've actually seen is that this has never happened before, wherein basically it was a 52-40 against vote, wherein 52 Republicans voted yes and not a single Democrat voted for her. It clearly shows that the Senate is now divided between party lines, that, you know, it has become very difficult to come to any bipartisan agreement, because back then the Senate could not even come up with the coronavirus relief bill, which could, you know, have helped businesses and allocated federal funds which should have helped small-time businesses, or even, you know, procure proper resources required for an economic recovery. And then the Republicans have just, you know, sped this nomination through, and one point which everybody is bringing up and Democrats brought it up, that is of hypocrisy, because they refused Obama's Supreme Court nominee in 2016, and which was much far away from the election then, but they just sped through this election, right? You know, it's just 1 week before the election, and that's what's getting people even more aroused, because, you know, obviously it was important the GOP stuck by their word, but did not. And as I said, the The Amiconi Belt has a record of taking funds from organizations that are clearly very extremist with their views. And then we also find that she has been against the Affordable Care Act, something that the Republicans have wanted to tear off and still haven't been provided a proper plan for it. And, you know, therefore, as the American people who are already cast in the ballot as we speak, it is important that they also, you know, when they cast that ballot, they take in factor everything into consideration, because one of the key jobs of the president is to appoint the Supreme Court judge, and that is like you require the best amount of judgment for it. You need to understand the views clearly, and here that hasn't been done. We don't know about the views on climate change, on voter suppression, and therefore, you know, it is just very strange that the GOP was not only hypocritical but also in some was not able to provide us with a proper assessment as to why this got her through the Senate. Just listen to that. That's because I have the majority. Now, coming to Afghanistan, where there have been pretty much of a number of bombings in Kabul and lots of skirmishes between the Afghan forces as well as the Taliban insurgents. Like, obviously, one thing coming in the headline has been the US and the Taliban have been able to come to, you know, a deal when the US withdraws its troops from Afghanistan and there is, you know, lasting ceasefire in Afghanistan. And, you know, I consider this as a very important part of diplomacy, because the more that is, if the US can, you know, finally end this war in Afghanistan, it is going to work for them. All the Taliban has been, in fact, a very radical Islamist organization that has been very much involved in killing number of US troops. And we've also learned in various reports that even Russia was somehow involved in, you know, placing bounties on US soldiers to Taliban. But, you know, this escalation of violence just would lead to a collapse of the very hardly very important negotiation between the US and the Taliban, and therefore the US envoy to Afghanistan has asked for a de-escalation process and that all parties come to the table for a lasting ceasefire. And now, you know, back to where we began this podcast with, about the fact about like even the US and Iran and how, you know, the sanctions have been pushing Iran towards building nuclear weapon. Well, the report was basically this. So the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, these inspectors confirmed that Iran is, in fact, is building an underground nuclear facility. And obviously satellite images also released have shown that Iran has begun construction at its Natanz nuclear facility, which was damaged in July by an explosion. Now, IAEA Director General Rafael Grossi said that Iran was also stockpiling low-enriched uranium, but it would not be enough to make a nuclear weapon. Now, obviously, these kind of moves would come among these tensions between the US and Iran, and I said that Iran, you know, would try to deviate, move on the agreement, because that would get them an ultimate nuclear weapon, since they do not have any clear, you know, the sanctions are continuously destroying Iran economy. And so the Iranian government won't even, now it will basically begin violating provisions, because now that those heightened tensions have resulted in diplomacy being destroyed completely. Even like the Council of Foreign Relations, a member of the council, Ray Teke, he wrote that Iran is determined to develop a sophisticated nuclear apparatus and advanced centrifuges are the core of such a program. Iranian officials have repeatedly said the nuclear program is for civilian energy purposes only, but US officials suspect the country is developing a military capability. So this way statement tells us that, you know, the US is not being able to catch a hold upon how it deals with Iran as a whole. Obviously, because the sanctions have continuously been imposed, and so the US must immediately begin negotiating a de-escalatory agreement, so that, you know, the Iranian nuclear program can fall in line with UN Security Council Resolution 2231, or one would know as a joint comprehensive plan of action, and then therefore these disagreements can finally be solved. So let's speak about another very important aspect of this election in the US. Well, already we've spoken about the foreign policy aspect, but you know, there's another aspect that people, you know, don't realize is the most important and yet one of the most controversial aspects of the US election, and is social media. Now, social media can range from Twitter to Instagram, Facebook, etc., etc., and you know, social media can play a very important role for political campaigns in real life. For example, like right now in the 2020 election, you find political slogans, campaigns all on all social media websites, political ads, etc., etc. You find videos targeting political opponents, and this goes on. But you know what happens when you know some of the that how does it affect all of us? Like, let's understand this with a case which happened in 2016 with then Republican candidate Donald Trump. Let's understand what had happened in that time in social media, which shook Facebook for life. And that is like, that scandal is called the Cambridge Analytica scandal. Now, you know, I understand this is a very complicated issue which happened in a time, and you know, it's going to be very difficult, so like, bear with me. So basically what happened is, Cambridge Analytica, it harvested information from 50 million Facebook users through an external app in 2015. According to a whistleblower who was Christopher Wiley, who worked there during that time, and it was basically a personality quiz, and about 270,000 people were paid to take it. Now, this quiz, it pulled data from those people's friends' profiles as well, and this resulted in a huge data stash. And this included personal information on where users lived, what pieces they liked, any kind of, and you know, these basically helped them to build fake psychological profiles and analyze their characteristics and personality traits. And you know, when social media makes these kind of copies of data of all of us, like when you log on to social media, you need an account, right? So when you give an account, there's a certain amount of personal information you have to give along with that. And when you have the information there, if you watch this document on Netflix called The Social Dilemma, it explains to you everything. It like the fact that, you know, there is a set of engineers who are employed to ensure that they can understand how we think, how we react to a post, whether we like it or not, how long does your eye look at a post, for how much time, when you like the post, how much you share a post. And in that way, it makes you understand more, and you know, that way they keep on throwing advertisement at you. The main deal is this: they need to keep you engaged to your phone on the social media app for as maximum time as possible, and for that they will analyze everything you do. We think we are private, we are secure. That's not it. We are being monitored at a close distance without our knowledge and consent. And the same thing was happening with Facebook, but this one is basically this. So the whistleblower Christopher Wiley, he said this: we exploited Facebook to harvest millions of people's profiles and built models to exploit what we knew about them and target their inner demons. Now, this in fact was basically a way of targeting voters and how they think, how they react, how politically inclined they are, whether they would vote, whether they would not vote. And this is completely, all these factors come into data analysis as a whole. So this quiz, which was run by Cambridge Analytica, it was created by Alexander Kogan, a Russian professor at Cambridge, who had, you know, shared it with a commercial partnership with SCL, or Strategic Communication Laboratories, and this SCL created Cambridge Analytica. And now we come with the big bombshell. That is, the Trump campaign, it hired Cambridge Analytica in June 2016 to help target ads using voter data gathered from millions of adults in the US. So for example, if you are a person who is a Democrat, but you know, say very politically inclined. It was their job to ensure that you vote towards a more extremist, polarized side, you become a Republican. That is the social media. It was meant to get you more addicted to the social media, keep you very much involved in it, while at the same time giving you more and more political ads which would, you know, change your mindset about certain issues. For example, say if you are a person who's pro-guns, right? Then it's just a simple example, hypothetical situation. So basically these ads would be run which would basically promote you to keep on buying more and more guns. It basically promotes you depending upon which campaign is running those ads. And this Trump campaign was able to use all this data from Cambridge Analytica to target voters, and in that way it actually, you know, somewhat I would consider it tampered with the US election in this way, because it tampered with it used voter data to, you know, to change it, to make it more Republican, to make it more polarized in that case. And you know, this Cambridge Analytica, it was not only used by the Trump campaign. During that time, in the UK, there was something else going on. A referendum was being held to vote for either leaving or staying in the European Union. And that leaving the EU was being referred to as Brexit. So the Brexit campaign also hired the Cambridge Analytica to take UK voter data and try to target them with ads in order to swing them more towards the side of the voting against, voting for leaving the EU. And obviously referendum resulted in winning, even Trump won the presidency, and therefore this became a huge scandal when these whistleblowers, they all came into when they actually came up and spoke about this very fact. Now, speaking about whether this is legal or not, well, the Observer, an article in the Observer, stated it could have been illegal based on data protection law. Even British legislation forbids personal data to be sold to third party without consent. Now, without consent, that's the primary term, because you know, this data of voters was taken without any proper consent of those voters. Did not wish to give the data. It was taken forcefully from them. It was analyzed forcefully without the consent, and it was used against them. So basically, they're using your own version against you. That's their main goal, in order to turn your entire mind towards any ideology which they are trying to promote, basically. And you know, there has been a lot of flack for Facebook for this very reason, because you know, Facebook even did not, you know, take this very seriously. They obviously removed the quiz app from the platform in 2015 and demanded that that Kogan, Wiley and the Cambridge Analytica confirm that they deleted all the data they harvested. However, you know, Wiley, he claimed that Facebook only demanded that they remove all the Facebook data in August 2016 and were very small steps. And I'm quoting him right now. Facebook waited 2 years and did absolutely nothing to check that the data was deleted. All they asked me to do was tick a box on a form and post it back. Now, even in the New York Times reported that the raw copies of the data could be obtained by Cambridge Analytica and are still available online. And obviously here there was foreign influence in even this, because according to Wiley's testimony, that is basically Cambridge Analytica in 2014 made a pitch to Russian oil and gas company Lukoil, and which was then sanctioned by the US. And this company, this Russian company, was interested in understanding a link between data, behavioral micro-targeting and political campaigns. And you know, this, and this happened at least thrice between 2014 and 2015, and therefore, you know, the fact that Russian oil companies were going to go on towards, you know, harnessing data on American voters, this shows that even Russia was somewhat implicated in this, and Russia also was somewhat involved in the US election, as well as obviously that fact that Russia hacked the US election, and it is already there. That proof was already laid out by many investigative agencies, and that had happened. And even the Brexit referendum, Russia had implications. But this we're talking about is Russia tampering with US American voter data. and that is extremely dangerous because, you know, now let's come to 2020, where, you know, like as we speak, the Senate has been grilling number of tech giants, Facebook, Google, and, you know, upon this very upon number of factors in this US election, because obviously one thing is that they do not want another 2016 to happen. They do not want Facebook to, don't want American voter data to be tampered with and, you know, made it as a weapon to weaponize it for their own election purposes. And because, you know, that's the very thing, the business model which Facebook and many other companies use is that they have to keep you completely engaged. And to do that, they give you the content which you look at most. And you know, the one thing is this, one content which actually gets your mind really hard is, it gets your mind like, gets you like active any moment, is very controversial type of content. Something, you know, not verified by news agencies, something that gets your mind completely alarmed. And this way tactic of engagement has been in fact one of the very reasons why, you know, I have also been extremely against Facebook on this very factor. Because back I think about 2-3 years ago, you know, obviously we are all aware of the Nazi genocide against the Jews, which was referred as a Holocaust, and there is a lot of evidence on it, like plenty of evidence, and we learn about it in history books, we learn it in various types of places, and this actually happened. But then there are people who continue to deny that a Holocaust actually happened, and Facebook continued to give a voice to these people, and they kept on amplifying their views. Now that's the thing, right? Something as controversial as this, people who have solid evidence, people like perhaps like people who, you know, have learned about all of this and know that, you know, this is true and are firm on it, that is different from them. But for people who are, you know, not very sure about the information, that would result in, you know, people inclining more towards the fact that Holocaust didn't happen, because it's controversial. It's very controversial, it's inaccurate, and people don't know it, but they're following it. Now, speaking about, you know, controversial theories, I think many who are hearing this from the US would very much recognize this. So, like, they would obviously, you know, identify a term like conspiracy theory. And, you know, then only you come in to focus the QAnon conspiracy theory, which has been amplified on Facebook for a very long period of time. And to be honest, it's a conspiracy theory which, you know, I just explain it to you like in brief, like there's a very brief conspiracy theory, but I just explain it to you. Like basically, you know, it's Q refers to a security clearance, and Anon basically means anonymous. So anonymous source of sorts. So conspiracy theory is this, that the world is being run by a cabal of pedophiles who worship Satan, and that Trump is trying to unmask the cabal and punish them. The cabal includes many Democratic members like Hillary Clinton, who eat on children. Now, this is like people who know, who understand, you know, this is entirely not accurate at all, no evidence towards this, and this is completely untrue therefore. And I have seen, like I watched CNN, and they've, you know, done interviews with people who believe in conspiracy theories, and there is this sort of ignorance and a polarization to see in these people who continuously, you know, support these theories. Because, you know, this hashtag save the children, it's a hashtag that is very important. It's very important to understand child trafficking is a very important issue in many countries, in the US, in India, even in many other countries. And it is important for government to crack down on them. But even child agencies, like people who actually look into this issue of child trafficking, even they have asked people to, you know, stop following QAnon, because it undermines their efforts to, you know, be able to crack down on trafficking. Because, you know, QAnon conspiracy theorists, their followers, they all simply post data of about child trafficking. Not true. It's not true at all. As like in a number of places, they've actually broken down how these people have tampered with child trafficking data, and it is not true. But Donald Trump, he just says he does not know QAnon, but he continuously retweets posts from accounts that have posted QAnon related content. And you know, the very fact that Trump has not been denounced as a conspiracy theory is again another failure in his administration, because you know, as much as it is important to play politics with your opponents, when you find your opponents in a clearly a position like Hillary Clinton being accused of being a pedophile, I mean, seriously, that's something you say it's not true, because it's not only moral, but it is important to, you know, maintain that image that they are still good political leaders. Otherwise, people who believe in this conspiracy theorists entirely blindly, it would result in, you know, it would affect their sentiment towards the Democratic Party, their party members. And you know, more and more Republicans are Republican congressmen are advocating QAnon conspiracy theories, and this is growing even more and more. Facebook has failed to crack down on this completely, because you know, it's freedom of speech, and like, you know, that freedom of expression, that freedom of speech, this is where freedom of expression is being curtailed. Because when you find people believing a fake conspiracy theory that is undermining efforts to ensure proper governmental rule and proper order, and like something which people are simply believing and getting completely polarized about, you know, this, you know, results in an undermined democracy, because then people don't understand how to exercise free speech. When you talk about free speech, it should be, you know, criticizing government on a basis of accurate reports, accuracy, right? Reports are extremely important. It's important to verify them. Moreover, there has been action. I won't say there's been no action going on, but there has been. For example, YouTube announced that it would take additional measures to block content that promotes QAnon, and even Twitter and TikTok blocked some hashtags and removed some accounts related to it. And even Facebook announced a ban on QAnon groups, and it is still. But however, it is important to, you know, change sentiment of people. Just banning these accounts won't work. It is important to tell these people, and whatever content they've been seeing, it is not, or hearing even for that matter, it's not true. It cannot be backed by evidence. It cannot be backed by the truth, and therefore, it does not hold any substantial value. Now, you know, why am I telling you all of this? Why am I giving you so many social media related stories? This is because the social media itself, you know, plays a very big role in the election. You know, if you want to reach out to people for potential votes, you need to go to social media. You need to, you know, promote your ideology, your campaign. And as I've seen many Trump attack ads, I've seen Biden ads, and they've both been, for example, when I see Joe Biden's ads, they have been rather more, you know, peaceful in approach, like not that offensive, not defensive either, but, you know, a more open approach of sorts. Whereas Trump's approach in his ads have been completely offensive against Biden, against Harris, and it's gone over and over again. So, therefore, it is important when you have polarized beliefs on both sides of the aisle, you know, there has to be a certain amount of moderation, because you just can't find people, you know, just posting any conspiracy theory. For example, even Trump, I think, retweeted this, that the US Navy SEALs didn't kill Osama bin Laden, which is like, I don't know, a US president actually tweeting that, it's really awful, to be honest. But, and that's why, you know, that's important, because, you know, you have supporters on your side, you have real people listening to you, following what you are saying, and therefore that kind of content can literally polarize people, and therefore social media groups should be held accountable, and, you know, they need to stop this business model of continuous engagement using controversial content. Rather, you know, I do follow channels like CNN or even sites like Vox, which continuously fact check everything that world leaders say, and any leader says, they continuously fact check those with evidence, proper, you know, like a substantial basis. And you know, it is important that all of us as citizens of democracies, we need to, you know, work together to ensure that there is possible, you know, you can't actually do much about content moderating social media, because again, that excuse, freedom of expression. So you need to now, we need to ensure that we can promote proper content that is more factual, more evidence based, rather than just conspiracy related. And I cannot be, because you know these elections, be it in US, India, anywhere, elections will matter because of social media. Even in Brazil, elections matter clearly because of, you know, number of extremist views of Bolsonaro and even of his expansion of social media as a whole. And you know, in times of this pandemic, when you have widespread misinformation, social media, you know, just serves as that one weapon required to, you know, amplify that misinformation and move forward with it. One of the reasons why QAnon has risen like it has multiplied is because of social media, because of the pandemic, where people are at home, where people are, you know, they are spending a very, you know, huge part of the day in social media, and that resulting in more and more of this kind of content, controversial content, inaccurate content being, you know, spread even further. So it is important for us to, you know, whenever we're looking at something, you need to verify it to news sources which are reliable, go to the facts, and you know, it is therefore, you know, important that when we exercise this democracy, this freedom of expression, it should be done in a proper way, substantial based, evidence based, and that's more important than ever, because these things, as I said, it continued. Brazil, it affected, social media affected it. In the US in 2016, social media played a really big role. And even in countries, any other countries, India, Germany, France, even these countries, things have become more and more polarized because of social media. And like, therefore, it is important for each one of us to take a responsibility as democratic citizens to be more understanding in our exercise of freedom of speech and expression. And well, thank you for listening to this podcast, and like, share it with your friends and family, follow it, and you know, keep giving your opinion, your views and your comments on the podcast. It's very helpful if I know what you guys like about a podcast, what you guys think I can improve upon, and you know, whether you like it or not, and whether the content is good or bad, or if it is really amazing. So please do feel free to voice your opinion, and I get back to you as soon as possible. Thank you. Bye.